I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 280 of the Handgun World podcast, a practical show done by an everyday practical guy like me. All right, well, this episode is an interview, and I'm going to explain that coming up in a little bit, but I want to correct something from last week's show. Last week's show, when I talked about small guns in episode 279, I made a mistake, so I need to admit my mistake and correct it. You know, John F. Kennedy one time said, a mistake does not become a problem unless you fail to correct it. So I'm going to go ahead and correct it. When I was talking about small guns, I was talking about the Beretta Nano at one point, and I said that the slide does not lock back after the last round is fired. That's wrong. What I was trying to refer to is that there's no slide release lever. The slide definitely locks back after the first round, but there's no slide release lever. So those of you who like to press a lever after you reload, if you like to press a lever to chamber a new round, you can't do that with the Beretta Nano. And some people think that's a disadvantage. I just kind of wanted to point that out. But I apologize for the correction. Yes, the slide on the Beretta Nano does lock back after the first round is fired. I received an email shortly after that podcast came out, and a listener made me aware of that. And so thank you. I appreciate the listener who did that so I could make this correction. Okay, before we get into the interview coming up, I received a great voicemail. I received an excellent voicemail once again about last week's show on small guns. This comes from Damian in Dallas, and he brings up a really good point. I'm going to answer his question, but I want you to hear it because it's probably been on the minds of some of the other listeners. Here you go.
Hey, Bob. This is Damian from Dallas. Just wanted to call in on episode 279 called Small Guns. It was a great podcast. I wanted to ask you a question on your comment when you said that you would not recommend these small guns as your primary carry, but you stated the reason was due to ammo capacity, because these are low ammo capacity. But you did not say it was due to caliber, obviously, because some of these small guns are 9mm. And, you know, between 9mm and 45 with modern ammunition, I'm at the school of thought that there's very little, if any, difference between them. So calibers aside, if it's not caliber related, which obviously in this case I don't think it is, you're saying you don't recommend them as your primary carry weapon due to ammo capacity. But I checked on the Shield and the 42, and the Shield's a 9mm, but it holds 6 rounds, and I believe the 42 holds 6 rounds of 380, and please correct me if I'm wrong. So without considering carrying one in the chamber, let's look at the Shield. The Shield holds 6 rounds of 9mm. Now, would you recommend that one as a primary carry, even though it has 6 rounds of 9mm versus 6 rounds 380 on the 42? Because my understanding was you were focusing on the number of rounds as a reason to consider as primary carry or not the caliber. And so please correct me if I'm wrong. And then if it is based on the rounds that you're recommending, you know, your primary carry weapon should have more than six, how many rounds does your 1911 have? Because my understanding is they only carry 7. So is one more round, does that break the barrier between low capacity and okay capacity? Me personally, I carry a Glock 26 as my everyday carry, which holds 10 rounds of 9mm and 11 if I wanted to put one in chamber, but it holds 10 rounds. And I sometimes carry my 19, depending on my attire. But so I just wanted to clarify if it's, you know, when you're talking about these little guns, you don't recommend them as your primary carry. You were basing it on rounds. So I just wanted to clarify if the caliber had nothing to do with it, because the 9mm Shield and the 380 Glock 42 both carry the same amount of rounds, but one is 9mm versus 380. And if it is based on just the rounds, then the 1911 only carries one more, unless I'm mistaken, or maybe you have a double stack 9mm version of a 1911 or something. But so just wanted to clarify that. I hope that makes sense. But anyways, thanks. Great podcast.
Okay, once again, based on my last segment, the Beretta Nano does, the slide does lock back after the last round of the magazine is fired. Regarding Damien's question, first of all, Damien, the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield comes out of the box with a 7-round and an 8-round magazine. The flush-fitting magazine holds 7 rounds plus one in the chamber. It's an 8-round gun if you use the flush magazine. If you use the extended magazine, it's a 9-round gun with one in the chamber because that magazine is 8 rounds. The Glock 42 is a 6-round 380 in the magazine plus one in the chamber. It's a 7-round gun. Okay, let me answer Damien's question. There are several reasons why I don't recommend small guns, most small guns, for a primary carry gun. I probably didn't make it clear enough in last week's podcast, so let me make it clear now. Capacity is not the only reason. Many of these small guns, they have very short sight radiuses. A lot of them don't have very good triggers. And the combination of a poor trigger and a short sight radius make them more difficult to shoot. Plus, a lot of them recoil a lot, and it makes them more difficult to shoot versus a midsize or a full-size gun. So as a primary carry weapon, meaning your go-to weapon, meaning something that you carry most of the time, I strongly recommend something Glock 26 M&P compact or larger, or XDM 3.8 compact or larger. Something that holds 10 to 12 rounds or more. Not just on capacity, but most of those guns have a longer sight radius. Most of them have a better trigger. And the combination of that longer sight radius, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, sight radius basically means the distance from the rear sight to the front sight. The longer that sight radius is, the easier it is to shoot it accurately. Also, most of them have better triggers. So, Damien, it's not only about caliber or capacity, even though I'm a big fan of capacity, but it's also about the other factors. You know, you carry a Glock 26 a lot. I've been carrying my Glock 26 a lot. I would strongly recommend a Glock 26 as a primary carry, or an M&P 9 compact, or an XDM, or an XD compact, or a Ruger SR9 compact, guns like that. Okay, those are excellent primary carry weapons because they hold plenty of rounds. They hold 10 or more rounds. They have very good triggers. They have long enough sight radiuses. You can change out the sights on them. You know, some of these small guns that I talked about last week, they have sights that are not interchangeable. And so that's another reason why I can't recommend them as a primary carry weapon, backup carry only. You see what I'm talking about? Now, one thing I like about the Glock 42 is that you can change the sights out on it, and it has a great Glock trigger. I like Glock triggers. I'm used to shooting them. I am a little nervous about the low capacity, only 7 rounds of 380. That's why I'm not going to recommend a Glock 42 as a primary carry weapon. I'm not going to recommend any of the pocket 380s as a primary carry weapon. The Smith & Wesson Shield, if you carry it with the 8-round magazine, you got a 9-round gun. I would say that's bare minimum. You have a 9-round 9mm. The XDS, that's borderline. I would say, yeah, you could, you know, would I recommend that as a primary carry? Well, since it's probably going to be easier for most people, or just as easy for most people, to conceal a slightly larger gun, then I would say go with the larger gun. Of course, now, if you're in an open carry state, and most of the time you open carry, well, then why would you want a small gun as a primary carry? Why not have something mid-size, full-size, or larger? So, Damien, I look at all factors. I look at all the factors that are involved, the ease of use, the ease of shooting, the ability to make accurate hits. And I said, yes, these small guns are accurate out to 15, 20, even 25 yards. But it takes a lot of work, and it takes a very skilled shooter to be able to shoot some of those small guns at that distance accurately versus some of the larger guns that are Glock 19, M&P 9, compact, or larger. Does that make sense? Regarding 1911s, yeah, you know, Damien, that's one of my reservations about a 1911. You know, 1911s, even if you have an 8-round magazine, you got 9-round gun with one in the chamber. Some 1911s, people get 7-round magazines, some of them 8-round magazines. Wilson Combat makes 8-round 45 ACP magazines for 1911s, giving you a 9-round gun. You know what? That's kind of one of my reservations. 1911s are heavy. They're big, most of them. Even the 3-inch 1911s, if you get one that's reliable, they're heavy for a 3-inch gun. And they don't hold very many rounds. So, yeah, that is one of my major reservations of a 1911. It's part of this one-year test. I'm trying to determine if I really feel comfortable carrying a 1911 with a lower capacity when I can conceal something else just as easily or easier with a decent caliber, good ammunition, and higher capacity. So, good question, Damien. Good voicemail. And hopefully that kind of clears it up. By the way, keep the voicemails coming, folks. My number is 210-646-1727. Once again, 210-646-1727. If you can't remember that number or can't write it down, go to handgunworld.com. And if you scroll down on the right-hand side, you'll see a Call Me button. And all you got to do is click that Call Me button and put in your phone number, and it will automatically link you with my Google voicemail. And you can leave me a message up to 3 minutes in length, and I'd love to have you on the show. Okay, I recently made a guest appearance on the Road Gunner podcast with the host, the unnamed trucker, sometimes also known as Chaz, from the Road Gunner podcast. If you don't listen to the Road Gunner podcast, let me recommend that you do that. And he'll be giving out the website in the interview. He's a trucker. He travels all around. He's got great perspective, excellent humor. He talks about traveling all over the place with guns. And I made a guest appearance over there. If you listen to that show, I apologize, this week is repetitive for you. You're going to hear the same interview that you heard on the Road Gunner podcast earlier. But some of you don't listen to that show. And I want you to hear this. We talked about a variety of things. It was a very good interview. We talked about everything from concealed carry. We even talked a little bit about ammunition. We talked about magazines. We reviewed a couple of guns that he owns. We talked about a training class coming up. We talked about a really cool thing that he's done to get more training under his belt. And I think it's pretty neat. I think you're going to benefit a lot from it. So here is my guest appearance on the Road Gunner podcast.
And welcome back to the Road Gunner podcast. Joining me this evening is Bob Main of the Handgun World podcast. Once again, thank you for joining me, Bob.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chaz. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. It's been a while since you've been on the show, but we spoke earlier this year. We were talking about some trigger control, and that was an excellent podcast, and it was got a lot of questions and feedback from that.
That's right.
So we thank you for that. There's some stuff coming up soon that I wanted to talk to you about because it's something I've been looking forward to for quite some time now, and that's the Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced with yourself, Ben Branham, and John Hottaway up at Nighthawk Custom Training.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. That's going to be a great weekend. Everybody who's signed up for that, you're going to have three instructors in a weekend, which is kind of a rare event. You know, those three instructors are going to be myself and Ben Branham and John Hottaway. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and I'm planning on attending. I've got that scheduled. I got a hotel room reserved, and I've got some funds in the bank to show up to that. And I'm looking forward to it. That's June 7th and 8th in Centerton, Arkansas, at Nighthawk Custom Training Academy.
Yeah, there's still some space available, too. All you have to do is go to NighthawkCustomTraining.com, or you can go to HandgunWorld.com, or you can go to Road Gunner Podcast website. You got a link on your site, right?
I've got the link for the Shooters Club, and I've got a link for Nighthawk Custom Training. You can just go right there to roadgunner.net, look at our fine list of sponsors.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to find that class. There's space available. I've heard the number that are registered so far, and I don't want to give the number out on the air, but I can tell you that the number of people registered so far, it's a good-sized group. It's not an oversized group. It's going to be a good number of people for the number of instructors in the facility. So whoever signs up is going to have a very good two-day training experience, I can tell you that.
So what are you and Ben going to teach while you're there? Can you give us a primer on the Beyond Concealed Carry?
Yeah, Ben and I, when Beyond Concealed Carry is, we start off with getting the basics out of the way, and I got to be straight up. We're going to spend the first couple hours making sure that everybody has the basics squared away, and I mean the basics on safety. We're going to work, make sure that you can shoot a good group, a good tight group, so we're going to work on trigger control. All the stuff we talked about in our last podcast, we're going to make sure everybody is squared away with good trigger control. And if you're not, we're going to help you. We're going to make sure everybody's got a good grip. We're going to make sure everybody knows how to properly draw safely from the holster and get a couple of quick hits on target real fast. So, you know, it's going to be a combination of both dry practice and live fire for the first couple of hours.
Okay. As a Masada Youth Group and staff instructor, the MAG classes tend to focus on marksmanship and accuracy. How important is accuracy when it comes to Beyond Concealed Carry?
Well, it's very important. We have to get that out of the way first. You've got to be accurate, and if you're not accurate, we're going to help you get there, because the rest of the class, and especially this two-day class, we're going to introduce a lot of moving and a lot of combative shooting. And if your accuracy is not dialed in before we introduce that, you're going to be missing the target a lot and maybe not get out of the class what you should get out of the class.
Do you emphasize moving, basically busting off the X and moving to cover or concealment? Is that a strong point in your class?
That's a very big strong point. We're going to teach a lot of that. We're going to teach a lot of moving off the X. For people that might be new, don't know what that means, getting out of your attacker's line of fire, or if your attacker has a knife or a baseball bat, if you can make yourself a moving target, it's proven that you have a better chance of surviving, because let's face it, if you've ever tried to shoot a moving target, it's hard. If you've ever tried to fight with somebody even hand to hand while they're moving, it's very difficult. So we're going to do that. We're going to teach you how to return fire. We're going to teach you when to shoot, when not to shoot while you're moving. We're going to have you moving forward, backward, laterally, left and right, a little bit on the diagonals. We're also going to teach you what to do if you fail to stop your adversary, stuff like that.
Okay, so you'll be shooting while moving in the class as well?
You'll be shooting on the move, absolutely.
We'll be shooting from behind cover at all or concealment?
Oh, yes. Yep. We're going to have a shooting from cover and concealment module. We're also going to teach you how to perfect your reloads and teach you what we think is a real fast and efficient way to reload and stuff like that. We're going to teach you malfunction clearing, what to do if your gun malfunctions in the middle of a fight, and so forth.
What about like tactical reloads or reloads with retention of your not fully spent magazine?
Yeah, we're gonna teach three different types of reloads. You know, reloading if you've run out of ammo, people call that a slide lock reload. We're gonna teach what I like to call the speed reload. Some people call it an emergency reload, and then we're gonna teach a little bit on tactical reloads or reloads with retention, things like that.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that part. Some of the complaints that I sometimes hear about Masada Youth Group classes is that it is a course that emphasizes marksmanship, and some folks think that there's no place for the classic stances like the Weaver or the Chapman stance now that everyone basically shoots isosceles. And what I like to point out in my class is that when you are taking a higher level course or a different course where they teach moving off the X and moving to shoot from behind cover, you may not always have the option of shooting from an isosceles stance, or you may be shooting for broken ground. You may only have enough room to do like a Weaver stance when the gun's closer up to you, so you'll be used to that. It's also sometimes when you do a failure drill and you're moving towards a target, either they're on drugs or armor or something like that, it is sometimes a lot easier if you know how to use a classic Weaver stance with your upper torso. It can act as a shock absorber as you're moving towards a target or laterally towards away from a target. So it does have its place, but I'm looking forward to the things that I've built up and learned at Masada Youth Group classes and working on that at Beyond Concealed Carry.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Anybody who says that there's no place for those stances, I think I would respectfully say that they're wrong. You know, if you're busting off the X and you are moving to someplace, if you're moving to cover or if there is no cover and you're just trying to get out of the way, you're going to be shooting from a very unconventional position. Let's face it, you're going to be shooting on the move. So you might combine a couple of those stances. You might be shooting from no stance. If you're moving rapidly, you know, your feet are moving, your shoulders are moving, your body is moving, your body might be twisting and turning a little bit, and you have to shoot, and you're not going to be standing still. So that's also what we're going to teach. We're going to teach that. And because we have a full 2 days, what I really like about this, because we have a full 2 days, we're going to have plenty of time to work on this. And John Hottaway's got some pretty cool stuff that he's going to teach as well.
Yeah, he unfortunately couldn't make it. He had a large bleeding hemorrhoid he had to take care of. So, you know, Bob,
that's a bad image. Why did you do that?
Because he would do it to me. So, one of the things I was thinking about, some of the things we cover at Masada Youth Group is one-handed shooting. And when you're shooting on the move, if you're moving perpendicular to a target, sometimes you start, that target gets farther and farther away, and as you move away, it's actually easier to take that support hand off and just shoot one-handed at a target as you're moving.
I 100% agree. In fact, that's my style. And people will see my style and they'll see Ben's style. You know, Ben likes to keep two hands on the gun as much as he can. I like to shoot one-handed as much as I can. And if I'm moving to my left, for me, my body mechanics, it works a lot better if I lose the support hand. I use my support hand for balance. Sometimes I use it and I make believe like I'm trying to move a loved one out of the way or, you know, something like that. And I'm shooting one-handed with my right hand. And we'll also teach people a little bit of point shooting at close distance with one hand and with two hands while you're on the move as well. So, you know, you'll see a couple different styles. The cool thing about our classes is the way Ben and I approach it is sometimes we teach something different, and we let the student decide what it is that they want to incorporate. We're going to make the students try it both ways, and then you can decide as a student what you want to use and what you don't want to use.
Yeah, that sounds like a cool class. I can't wait to finally meet Ben and take the class as a student. I'm going to have to carry heavy things in order to, you know, John's going to make me work. Let's just put it that way. I'm going to carry heavy things, and I'll be fetching him water and cutting his cigars, lighting him, that kind of stuff. So I'll be taking my usual position as the chief manservant at Nighthawk Custom Training Academy. I did have to sell a gun in order to have enough money for the weekend, the hotel room and all that stuff. My wife will hopefully be with me in the hotel room. She won't be taking the class, but she sacrifices her work when we're both off the road because we drive together.
Yeah.
And so when I'm not working, she's not working. So my wife is like, well, I don't know if we got enough money to do this weekend because, you know, we've got bills to pay and things like that. So wait, tell you what. The last time I carried my SIG 1911, I was just like, am I really going to carry this gun all the time? Because I hadn't carried it in a long time.
Yeah.
So I took a trip down to Houston. I decided to carry it one last time, and I was like, man, you know, it's for the same weight, I can get more capacity. Do I have anything against 1911s? No, absolutely not. Am I worried about the safety? Not at all. I don't care about that stuff. It's just I feel more confident and comfortable with something else and more capacity in 9mm. I don't have any problem with recoil or anything like that. That particular gun was really nice, and it went to I sold it to a former Masada Youth Group Mag 40 student that I met.
Cool.
At the Gun Dudes Mag 40. And they're going to put it to better use than I am. So would I carry 1911 again in the future? Yeah, but I'm going to save up some money and get one. You know, I kept on just putting new grips and sights and all kind of doing all kinds of stuff to it. And I was like, why don't I just get one that's got everything on it that I want? You know, ambi safety, all that good stuff. And so at some point in the future, I will be a 1911 owner again. Please don't send me any hate mail. I do like them. I would carry one. It's just, you know, there's other guns that have higher capacity and they're smaller and lighter, and with effective modern ammunition, they're just as effective. So that's what I've chosen to do. Sold it to a guy. Now I've got money to go to this class.
Well, no, as you know, Chaz, you know, I hate 1911s. You know that, don't you?
I know you do. That's why you own two.
That's why I own two of them. As a matter of fact, one of them is a SIG 1911, very similar to the one that you sold. I'm loving my SIG RCS. It's great, and most people know I'm doing a one-year test, and I'm switching back and forth between Striker Fire and 1911. And next January, I'll do probably a couple of podcasts, or at least one big, long podcast, to talk about, you know, the results of my one-year experiment.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. One of the reasons I sold it is because I just wasn't feeling it. And so I have told my listeners, and I'm sure you've told yours, that if you can't afford to go to a training class, we'll sell a gun. So that's exactly what I did. And put the money in the savings account, and that's going to cover my class.
I think that's awesome. I really commend you for doing that. I think that's really, really cool. And I bet there's a lot of people listening to this show right now that have a gun that maybe they don't shoot much, and it might be a safe queen. You know, consider selling that and raising some money to get some training, and then bring the guns that you shoot a lot and that you carry a lot and train with those. And speaking of that, I just thought of something I wanted to put out there. Ben and I have had a lot of people over the last couple of years that come through our classes bring their carry guns, their small little carry guns, and I really encourage that. If you come to this class, bring what you carry. That's one of the most important things. I'm a big believer in that.
Speaking of that, I've recently listened to you and John on one of your shows talk about the M&P Shield and also the Walther CCP.
Yes.
And both of those guns have a thumb safety on those. And you are the opinion that you don't like pistols with thumb safeties, and I can see that opinion, because what if it accidentally safety comes on when you need it to be off? And John was saying that just deactivate the safety and just carry it that way, because I've got a double action trigger. My opinion is that if you're going to carry a gun like that, you need to anticipate that the safety will be on, and that the safety is both on and off at the same time while it's in your holster until you ascertain the actual position of that safety when you draw it. I don't assume that the gun is on safe when I do administrative handling of the pistol. I check to make sure that the gun is on safe if I'm going to unload it in the presence of loved ones in the truck. It's a very close quarters in there.
Right.
I also don't assume that when I draw it and fire it that the gun is going to be off safe. I check to make sure it's whatever state that it should be in. Obviously, if I'm about to fire, I'm going to thumb it off safe. If I'm going to pull it back as if to, if I'm done shooting or assessing or I'm about to holster it, I turn the safety back on. So it's imperative that folks that do choose to carry guns like the Ruger SR9 or the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, that they need to train as if the safety is going to be on when they draw and fire. I don't think there's really any other way you should do it, because Murphy's Law is going to bite you in the butt if you think that it's in the proper state when you are about to fire it. Personally, I've put the shield in my holster with the safety on, and I've leaned over to pick up a sock off the ground, and I hear a click. This was in my bedroom just like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
And I go, you know what? That sounds almost exactly like the safety on an M&P9 shield going off. And lo and behold, I slowly unholstered the pistol and pointed in a safe direction, and lo and behold, the safety is now off, even though I had thumbed it on.
Really? Well,
yeah.
You know, Chaz, let me say this. I agree with you. If you have a pistol with a thumb safety, you need to train to disengage that thumb safety while you're drawing. The exception that I make regarding thumb safeties is with 1911s. And the reason being is because 1911s, nearly all of them, have a very easy thumb safety to disengage. It's so natural. And, and that thumb safety sticks out away from the frame and it's long enough, it's a piece of cake. And all the practicing I've been doing now since I've had these two 1911s, it hasn't slowed me down. I thought it was going to, and I have to be up front and say it hasn't slowed me down. What I don't like about the Smith & Wesson Shield is that's not a very easy thumb safety to disengage while you're drawing the pistol. It hugs the frame. It's too close to the frame. And the larger M&P pistols, those thumb safeties are like a 1911 safety, but they've made the shield with a safety that hugs the frame way too tightly. And I think sometimes it can take too long to disengage that. Now, I've never heard of anybody like yourself saying that it disengaged when they didn't want it to, but that's also a thing to consider, because if you think it's on and it's off, then you might be searching for when you draw it in the time of need, you might be trying to turn it off and it's already off.
Right. So my philosophy is kind of a Zen philosophy. I'm going to, whatever the safety's position that it's in is what it is, and I'm going to be prepared for either state to exist, whether it's on or off. Also, I have to take disagree with you slightly. Personally, I don't have any problem disengaging the safety. I find the safety on the Smith & Wesson M&P9 shield to be easy to disengage.
Really?
And
okay.
A little bit harder to engage.
Okay.
Personally, I don't know if that's because my thumb is exactly on that thumb safety, just the length of my thumb. So for me, I don't have any problem with that. I love the shield. And I have carried it daily for several weeks at a time, because it's a decent capacity pistol with, I've got the Apex trigger kit in it. It's got good sights. For me, it's extremely accurate.
Now, it may have something to do with hand size, because my thumb is pretty long.
Yeah.
And when I get a firing grip on my shield, my thumb, the part of the thumb that normally would disengage the safety, it's actually past.
Right.
It sticks out past the thumb safety. I actually have to retract my thumb a little bit to hit that little lever to disengage the thumb safety.
Right, and I can see why that would be difficult. And for me, the pad of the thumb rests directly on the safety. So
yeah, not for me. But then with both my 1911s, the pad of my thumb right on that safety just where it should be, and it's really easy. So I would, some people might be surprised to hear me say this, I would opt for a small 1911 versus a Smith & Wesson Shield.
I don't know if I go with the 3-inch 1911, but something like a Springfield EMP, which is designed around the 9mm case.
Right.
Or if you have just $3,500 laying around and you're like, oh, wow, I got to get a Nighthawk, I'd get a Nighthawk T4. The Nighthawk T4, and I do not get paid for by Nighthawk. I get paid by Nighthawk Custom Training, which is a separate entity. The T4 is an amazing 9mm pistol that with superior accuracy and reliability, and it's a 1911 style pistol that's designed around the 9mm case.
Right.
But yeah, it's $3,500.
Yeah. Well, rich people like you and I, we have it laying around. We should just go get one, huh?
Yeah, I'm actually sitting on a pile of $100 bills that's cushioning on this chair. So
yeah, so am I. Yeah, because this podcasting is very profitable, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks, Bob. You know what? Yeah. If you want to alleviate your worries about something like the 9mm, like the shield, the car pistols are nice. They don't have a thumb safety to worry about. The CM9 is a good pistol. I'm super happy about the magazines. If you're going to carry, and my advice is, if you carry any car pistols, to carry your spare ammunition in some kind of holder that will keep that top cartridge from popping out.
Yep.
Whenever I put a loose spare magazine into a pocket, about 9 times out of 10, that top one or two cartridges will pop out of the magazine, especially the top cartridge. So
yeah, that is an issue. In fact, I carry my spare car magazine in a DeSantis Magpacker that sits in my pocket, and I've never had a problem with that top round coming out of the mag.
Yeah, I would imagine in a something like a mag holder or a DeSantis mag packer, I don't think it would be a problem. Problem is most people carry pistols that small, carry it in a pocket, and they don't think about putting it in a pouch of some kind or a holder. The Kel-Tec PF9 is a good solid pistol. One more round capacity than the Kel-Tec. It is it's a brute to shoot for some reason. Just from the way those grips, the checkering on the grips is just blast that recoil right back into your hand.
Yep.
But I found it to be fairly reliable. It doesn't have the fit and finish of the car pistols. But if you want to, so that doesn't have a thumb safety either. Also, if you want a little bit more capacity and you're a little bit girthier, the Glock 26 with the flush fit 10 round magazines has got more capacity and it's only a smidge thicker. I was looking at my shield versus the Glock 26, and the Glock 26 is almost a quarter of an inch shorter. It is at least a quarter of an inch shorter with the flush fit magazine.
Yes, it is.
And also, it's only about an eighth of an inch longer, and it's just a little bit wider. And for me, that's not a problem.
It's not a problem for me either. I've been carrying my fourth generation Glock 26 a lot, and again, you know, the thickness of it for me is not much of a problem. A good holster, good belt, you know, the weight, you'll notice that the weight's not a lot different from a G26 to a Shield M&P9 either. It's not a big weight difference.
Right.
And I carry my G26 like you do with the flush fitting magazine, the ones that come out of the box with it. I don't see the point in adding a magazine grip extension. You know, it's very similar to a Glock 19 when you do that. I understand that the butt of the grip would be a little bit more rounded and a little bit more concealable, but, you know, I've got good holsters and good belts to conceal a Glock 19 too. So I carry the G26 the way it's, in my opinion, the way it's originally meant to be carried, and that's with the flush magazine.
Right. I spent a lot of time firing it without the pinky extension with the flush fit magazine. And I can do it just fine. In fact, I was practicing today with the Glock 26 Gen 4 at 15 yards, but no problem. No problem at all. It's a super accurate pistol, just like any other Glock. I plan on putting some 10.8 Performance or some Warrants of Igni carry sights, plain black, on it. And for me, I can give you two reasons why you could justify carrying it with the two-round magazine extension,
yeah,
the pinky extension, two more rounds. And it is shorter, therefore, and with the lower capacity, it also weighs less. So if weight is a concern for you, but you want a pistol with 13 rounds on board, hey, that's a pretty good way to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, and carrying it that way.
You do get three more with the Glock 19, but it weighs a little bit more. My reloads with the Glock 26 is a 17-round Glock 17 magazine that I've made sure actually works in my gun, you know, test it with ammo,
right,
to make sure it works. Because not people are always saying they can, you know, exchange the magazines and whatnot. But I had a student in the class that was trying to use a 33-round Glock 18 stick as a reload in the class.
Oh boy!
And it was not working so good for him.
Yeah, that could have issues.
It also made me laugh, so I want to thank that student for doing that. So thanks for the comedy moment.
It's making me laugh just picturing it.
Let me tell you about something fun that happened during the class that was hilarious, in my opinion. A student brought a Baby Desert Eagle and 40 Smith & Wesson to the class. The student's about 6'5", maybe 6'6", a very large man. He's shooting the Desert Eagle and 40, and his brass is shooting out of his gun like it was being shot out of the gun, like there's a bullet coming out of the barrel and there's brass shooting out the ejection port.
Okay.
And it was flying all over the place. As we got back to our 15-yard range, that's the maximum distance for the qualification. We were practicing the quals. And at that point, you're back inside the shooting stalls, as you would at a traditional indoor range. His brass is shooting directly at the fluorescent lighting that's in the bay.
Oh wow!
Next to him, his brass hit one of his shots. The brass hits the fluorescent light, and it knocks the fluorescent tube out of the fixture, and it falls and shatters on the ground. So we call C-Spire and sweep it all up. We had to redo that string of fire. However, that gentleman ended up shooting my Walther PPQ M2 in the qualification because his gun was, how shall I describe it? A jam fest, jam-o-matic, jam-o-rama, whatever you want to call it, that thing wouldn't run.
Really?
And he was not going to make it through the qualification. I said, look, guy, do you want to make it through the qualification? He was like, yeah. Why don't you shoot my gun? He's like, I don't have any 9mm ammo. I'll give you some. So, because, you know, I like people who have eclectic taste in guns.
Yeah.
But I also want them to, if they before they come to a class, put 300-400 rounds to the thing without jamming before you bring it to a class. Let's not bring a gun to class and figure out then that that's when the gun doesn't work, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I've always said that, you know, coming to a training class that you pay good money for and spend your time, that's not the time to figure out if your gear works.
It's a really, really nice looking gun. It feels nice. It's all steel. I saw one in a pawn shop today in 9 for like $500, which I was tempted to get just because it looked nice. But
yeah,
if you're going to come to Beyond Concealed Carry or Mag 20 Live Fire or Mag 40, whatever, bring a gun that works. You can make, you know, you can, if you figure your gun can make it through 200 rounds without a malfunction, you're probably going to be okay. And then lube it, clean it, and all that good stuff, and make sure it's running again before you bring it to class, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. I 100% agree with you.
And if you're serious about being a concealed carry person, bring some mag pouches or buy some mag pouches that you're going to use in a holster that isn't made by Fruit of the Loom. I mean, I understand that that magazine pouches are designed to do, and the holster is a lot more important. If you bring a good belt and a good holster, I'll probably let you get away with a crappy magazine holder if you can get your magazines out. But I saw one guy had a Fruit of the Loom ballistic nylon magazine holder and basically covered up the entire magazine except for the base plate. And that makes it extremely difficult to get the magazine out of the holder.
Hey, you know, and speaking of belts, you brought something up about belts.
Yeah.
If you're going to go to a training class, don't bring a 15-year-old Walmart belt that's so worn out and flimsy that your holster and your gun are hanging 3 inches off of your body while you're going through class.
Right. You can get yourself, if you're a fancy gentleman or lady, get yourself something from High Noon Holsters or Concealment Solutions. Get a leather one. Crossbreed Holsters makes leather belts now. But you don't have to spend $100 on a gun belt.
No.
You can get a $50 Wilderness Tactical belt that's got a lot of adjustments, got a Velcro adjustment on it and a steel belt buckle, or a 5.11 instructor belt. Those work just fine. I've got three or four 5.11 belts that just in different colors, and have them around for students to use it if they need it, because there's nothing worse than a bad belt.
Nope. I'd like to give a plug to Sturdy Belts, sturdybelt.com, David Scaife's company. He makes some nice stuff too, especially if you want something that's good looking, and you can also, it doubles as a gun belt. You can check those out too.
Okay. And since we're mentioning folks like that, I do have to thank ammunitiondepot.com. for providing ammunition for the instructors and to Glenn Tate during the Mag 40 most recently. So I want to thank them. I didn't actually get a chance to shoot a pace setter, but I did practice for one in case we were to shoot that. There were some issues at the end of our class that we had to deal with. But Glenn shot ammo from ammunitiondepot.com, so I want to thank them.
Yeah, I've made some purchases from ammunitiondepot.com. Good prices, good stuff. Hey, Chaz, I wanted to ask you a question. You brought up a few minutes ago your Walther PPQ. Are you still carrying it, still liking it, and talk about it?
Yeah, I kind of use the PPQ as my house gun, and I use it for instruction as well as the Glocks and stuff. The PPQ seems to be a gun that you can put it in somebody's hand, and I've never had anybody yet that said, oh, this feels terrible. It feels really nice in the hand. It's extremely accurate because it's got a nice, smooth trigger with smooth take-up, clean, crisp break, and a short reset. And we talked about that in a previous podcast, what those terms mean.
Right.
It's got decent sights. I would probably, when they come back in stock, get some 10-8 performance sights for my Walther PPQ. These sights, the rear sight on the Walther PPQ M2 is windage adjustable, but I believe they're made of plastic, so which a lot of, you know, high-end, high-performing guns like Glocks come with plastic sights, and I'm going to get either some 10-8s or some Warren Tactical or David Savigny carry sights on my guns
right.
for my Glock 26. The PPQ is extremely accurate, I found. It is more, if you have good fundamentals, it is it rewards a shooter who already has good fundamentals, and it will lessen the effects of a shooter that has poor fundamentals. It can bring them a little bit more accurate because it is an easy gun to shoot. It has ambidextrous slide stops, and they're also extended, so it's easy to reach them with people of different thumb lengths. You know, unlike the Glock, which has got that little tiny tab on the side, which I've become very used to operating that, so it's
yeah.
not a big deal. Also, I find the magazine release is a nice big round one American style on the M2. It's very positive. The magazine drops freely pretty quickly, and the magazines can be a little bit pricey, but they seem to be fairly available. And if you're going to buy Walther magazines and you have a PPQ M2, you got to make sure you get them for the M2, which is the American style magazine release, because the notch on the magazines is in a different position for the M1, which has a European mag release.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Good guns. You know, I've yet to shoot one. There's a guy here that's in town for a few weeks, and I'm trying to connect with him because he said he would let me borrow it for a little while, and I'll take it to the range and shoot one of those. And if I don't get a chance to put that together, why don't you bring it to the class in June? Let me fire it for a little bit.
I'm planning on it, I'm sure. And John's got, like, cases of them sitting around.
Well, that's right, yeah. He's got a whole pallet of Walther PPQ M2s, right?
Yeah.
He's
got a bunch. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, the last time that he was on, he was talking about how much of a believer that he is in that. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question. Now that you are an instructor, what do you find to be one of the more rewarding aspects of being an instructor?
Well, the most rewarding of this particular event that I had is it's a two-day event. The Live Fire is 2 days, and there was a guy, I forget where he's from, but he was really standoffish, didn't want to be part of the group, and he just looked like he was having no fun on day one. And he was not performing the techniques as described in the training. And I took him aside and said, "Hey, man, do you have a problem with any of the techniques that we're teaching?" And he was like, "Well, I'm just used to doing this other way, you know." Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, "Hey, you know, I've already got your money, so you can do whatever you want to, but since you're here, why don't you go ahead and just try some of these other stances? You never know when you may actually need them or not. If you're just going to be at the range all day plinking, you can shoot isosceles all day. I don't care. You're not going to bother me whatsoever, but if you're having to run to behind cover and you don't want to be having your gun poking past your hardcover because you're up against a wall, you might want to try Weaver or something like that."
Right.
You know, not always have the luxury. If you're actually serious about defending your life, try some of this other stuff. Otherwise, I don't care. Go for it, you know? And day two, he came back and he thanked me. He gave me a good evaluation, and I consider that a victory. Kind of pulled him back, you know?
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, those are excellent victories when you turn somebody around, aren't they?
Yeah, that was a good one. I kind of lucked out. Everyone was right-handed, no revolvers, no 1911s in this particular class. So, it was a little easy, but we did have some adversity that we had to overcome, some issues with some jacket splashback. So we closed down one portion of the range. And we had to shoot the qualifier with three people at a time because to make sure that people could have enough room to do it safely, and along with the safety officers and backups and things like that. So it was successful. I also hosted Matt Masada Yoop for 2 days at the classroom portion. That went very well. I got some good feedback from Mass, and everyone was happy for the most part.
Good. I'd like to say, regarding the class coming up June 7th and 8th, revolvers and 1911s are welcome. Basically, any kind of a handgun is welcome as long as it's like a 380 or larger caliber. You know, bring a standard caliber that's being used today, mainly because, you know, if you need to borrow ammo from somebody, you know, that's helpful. And also, most people, that's what they're carrying. They're carrying 380s, 9s, 40s, 45s, 357s, 38 specials, guns like that.
So I can bring my Schofield?
Yeah. Go ahead, bring it. Yeah.
I don't have one, but I wish I did.
Yeah. Chaz, what do you find is a frustrating part about being an instructor?
You know, it's hard to, when the facility is what it is and you get some negative feedback about the facility, it's frustrating that they don't realize that the facility is what it is. If I could have found a better facility or an ideal facility, we would have had it at the, what's that gun range out in Phoenix? Scottsdale, the Guns Club?
Yeah.
We would have, and then everyone would have had a catered lunch and everyone would have had their guns loaded for them and cleaned for them and all that stuff. You know, I get it. The facilities could have been better. They can always be better, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, they can always be better. I'll tell you what I find frustrating about being an instructor is students that come to class with guns and gear that don't work. You know,
yeah.
Guns and gear that don't work. Mainly guns that don't work. But I've had people that come with holsters that are not very good. I've seen belts that are just simply not very good. Magazines that are not very good. That's one of the frustrating things for me.
Right. And the guy that brought the IWI Baby Eagle,
uh-huh.
We're friends, and so I kind of had a feeling he was going to bring some piece of crap that was going to work. Because I love him to death, and I was starting. It's like, man, why don't you buy a Glock or a Walther or some, you know, a Smith and Wesson
or M&P or XD?
Yeah, shoot that thing at the range all day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
absolutely. And if you can get to work, fine. But if you're gonna bet your life on something like that, I'm gonna go with something that's proven reliable and that I've proven reliable by putting hundreds of rounds downrange.
You know, and there are plenty of 1911s that are proven reliable, and of course, 99% of revolvers are proven reliable. So come with something that you have practiced with and shot a lot that you know is going to work. And if your magazines, you know, make sure that you have good quality magazines that you know work, and a good holster and a good belt. And not only is it frustrating for an instructor to try to teach somebody, but it's also frustrating for the student if their stuff's not working.
Yeah. And look, if you're going to buy a $400 used Glock, that's not that much more than saving up for if you're thinking about getting something less reliable. Get a $400 used Glock, Smith & Wesson, a Ruger SR9, something like that. Put in that. Get a good holster, even like something, I'm not sponsored by these guys, but like Alien Gear holsters are like $30 or something like that.
Yeah.
They're similar to a Crossbreed or whatever. I would recommend, you know, I'm sponsored by Concealment Solutions. If you have class and taste, I can't recommend those guys enough. That's all I carry is Concealment Solutions. If you don't want to spend a lot of money on a fancy mag carrier, go to Walmart, get a Blackhawk magazine carrier.
Yeah, exactly.
It work.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to spend a whole lot of money. I'll tell you something else that's frustrating. I don't know if you've run into this yet, but you might. It never fails. It seems like students love to bring their big honking race guns to a training class. You know, they bring this big tricked out competition model pistol, and I know they don't carry it. I know it's something that they probably shoot IDPA or USPSA, or they just go to the range and have fun with it. And we're teaching a defensive class. Now, you know, I some people might not like the fact that I'm saying this. And, you know, you can send all your hate mail to roadgunnerpodcast@gmail.com. But
Yeah.
I know that most people, 95% that have these big tricked out race guns, they don't carry those things. Let me encourage you to bring what you carry to a defensive class. If you're going to a competition match, okay, take your race gun. But if you've got a tricked out, you know, 1911, a tricked out Glock, or a tricked out M&P full size 5-inch Pro Series model with all the fancy gizmos and doodads on it, and you never take it out of the safe except for going to competition, let me encourage you to bring something that you carry, because at the end of the day, that's what you're going to bet your life on.
Absolutely. I agree. So let's go back to talking about the class for a second. We talked about the things that you and Ben are going to cover. Had John mentioned to you some of the things that he plans to cover on day two?
Yeah, he did. One of the things I'm really excited about, and I'm going to try to be a student mainly on day two, he's going to teach how to protect loved ones, and that's pretty good. And I think he's going to also teach a little bit on how to defend if someone's being held hostage and stuff like that. That's kind of cool.
Oh, I thought he was just going to teach people how to put a proper V-cut in the end of a premium hand-rolled cigar.
Well, that too, okay. Yes. And from what I understand, he's going to talk about some of his favorite hand-rolled cigars as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's well worth the price of admission right there.
One of the things that I'm looking forward to is he's going to, on Saturday night, I believe, he's going to show some folks how to break their pistols down beyond field strip and actually detail strip a little bit.
Yes, he is. And he's also going to teach how to use some technology for self-defense and also for training yourself and practicing, which that's kind of cool, too. I know John's big on technology, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I am, too. It's that's a lot of stuff out there that's non-gun related to help people with their self-defense needs.
Plus, I'll tell you what, I've seen Hadaway shoot, and he's an incredibly accurate shooter. So when John's teaching, if there's someone coming to this class that really needs to work on accuracy, I think John's your guy.
Also, just want to remind some folks, when they do come to Nighthawk Custom, do not look John directly in the eye.
Right.
And bow slightly when you meet him.
Yeah, bow slightly. Don't look him in the eye. Now, you think he's going to have those porta-potties there?
I think so. They're improving the facilities at Nighthawk daily, but I think there's still porta-potties for now.
Yeah.
Running water is in the future. And flush toilets.
And if you come to class, you can feel free to use his nickname, Big Sexy.
That's Deputy Big Sexy.
Oh, that's right. So. Deputy. He wears a badge now.
Yeah. Just remember, he's got full arrest powers. That's all you got to remember. What?
Well, maybe we should have a no-arrest policy on the range. What do you think?
Yeah, hopefully. Unless you... if you shoot one over the berm intentionally, yeah, you're going to jail. So
yeah. Now, also, too, I'll say don't shoot the instructors, because we do shoot back.
Absolutely.
You know, so we're all going to be out there with loaded guns, and I'm just kidding. But, you know, that's it. In fact, you know what the difference between, as an instructor, do you know what the difference is between an unfortunate incident and a tragedy?
No.
If I'm the instructor and you shoot yourself, that's an unfortunate incident. But if you shoot me, that's a tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I'm 100% in on that, Bob.
So we want to avoid tragedies out on that range.
Absolutely. And nobody shoot themselves either, because it really makes us look bad.
So between now and then, what are you doing? Just trucking around?
I'm only going to be out on the road for a couple weeks before I'm right back in Rogers taking the 3-day weekend. That's why I had to sell the gun to have the money for the weekend. But yeah, and after that, I'll get back on the road for till August 1st.
Yeah.
And then I'll be going to an instructor development course at Range Master taught by Tom Gibbons.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. I would love to go take a class taught by Tom.
Well, I did that, and well, I haven't done it. I'm looking forward to that too. Then let me see, October 2nd through the 5th, there's Masadi Group Mag 40. Mass will be there all 4 days in Centerton, Arkansas. You can register at nighthawkcustomtraining.com, just like you can for Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, June 7th and 8th.
Now, you're looking at, I think you said you're looking at in July, possibly putting on another Mag 40 live fire?
Mag 20 live fire,
Mag
the
20,
range
yeah.
only, because
yeah.
There were some students that had some interest in going to that after they took the classroom only, because our live fire was sold out.
There are
no dates posted yet, but when they are posted, they will be at Nighthawk Custom Training Academy, and that's not a guarantee, because it's going to depend on my work schedule and the amount of interest that I can get through email from those folks who wanted it to go in the first place.
Hey, Chaz, I wanted to ask you another question. Do you own any rifles?
Not yet. I used to own a Mini 14, and I didn't want to leave it at home without having a safe.
Right.
So when I get a... major purchases next is a safe, and then I got my, I already know what I'm going to get, though.
What are you going to get?
I'm going to get a SIG 556 XI.
Nice.
That thing is sweet.
Nice.
Oh, I picked one up the other day. It's got to be like a 7-pound rifle.
A SIG 556 XI. What is the XI version?
The XI version has has ambidextrous safety lever, and also you can reverse the charging handle to be on the left side.
Okay. The SIG 556 models are excellent.
Yeah.
And that was one of my only reservations about them, is the charging handle on the right side. So if you can put that thing on the left, that's great.
Yep. It takes P-Mags, and it's got a trident-shaped flash suppressor and flip-up sights.
Yeah.
Flat top with flip-up sights. That will be my next rifle. Folding stock, removable cheek piece.
Folding stock makes it attractable.
Yeah. And I believe if you remove the cheek piece when it's folded, you can fire it with the stock folded, I think. Don't hold me to that, though.
SIG makes some very nice rifles, and I have a SIG M400 AR-15 that I really like.
Yeah. They make incredible guns, and... I did like my 1911. I think my next SIG purchase... No, I know my next SIG purchase will be that, because I've got some friends that work at SIG.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, it is nice to... to all you folks out there, start a podcast and start meeting some folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's how I get paid. You know, this doesn't make any money, but it's a advertising vehicle, obviously, for the training classes that we do, and sometimes we get free stuff to try, and we get to keep it sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I've been getting some free stuff for two or three years now, and it's been great, you know. And, yeah, sometimes you have to send it back. Sometimes they say, you know, you just go ahead and keep it, my pleasure.
Yeah, guns, I don't get to keep. I've never gotten a free gun, and I doubt I ever will, but I've gotten some discounts on stuff. Let's just put it that way. So.
Well, that's cool.
So, Bob, what's coming up for you? We already know, right?
Yeah, well, we know that the June class is coming up. I'm not going to teach anything in July because most of the time it's way too hot. Mm-hmm. August, as people know, Ben and I are flying up to the Seattle area, SQUIM specifically, and we're going to be teaming up with Glenn Tate and one of the members of the team, and we're teaching Beyond Concealed Carry one-day class out there, which that class has been sold out since, I think it's been sold out since end of February.
Yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy meeting, quote-unquote, Glenn.
Glenn,
super
yes.
Super nice guy. Super humble. Just a genuinely good guy. Really want to endorse his books. I think I've read one through four, and I've got five and six on my Kindle. I've been reading a lot of nonfiction lately, so just trying to prepare my mind to be a better instructor. But, I enjoy fiction, and Glenn's books are fantabulous.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. And, by the way, people have been emailing me about the waiting list for that class. I've got six people on the waiting list. There was one spot that opened up. We filled that, so I'm filling him with people that in order that are on the waiting list in order. And if you want to get on the waiting list, email me. You never know. I mean, August is a long way away. Some people might have to cancel and back out or whatever. So, you know, if you get on the waiting list, you still might get a spot. And Ben and I are talking about some goodies in September and October and November. I can officially announce another night class, a night fighting class with pistols that Ben and I are teaching in November. That's going to be here in San Antonio. So anybody that's listening to this that's in Texas and wants to make the trip, that night class is going to be, let me look at it here real quick. I think it's going to be November 9th. I think it's going to be on Saturday, November 9th. So be looking at the website, handgunworld.com, and also Ben's modernselfprotection.com website. We'll be putting those classes up shortly.
Well, that's awesome. I do want to ask you about how you're feeling. We know that our listeners want to know what your medical situation is as of late.
Thanks for asking. I'm feeling great. Something must be working. You know, my chemo must be working because I'm feeling a whole lot better than when I was diagnosed a couple months ago. And by the end of this month, end of May, I'll have some test results back on some scans that I'm going through to see how much cancer is still left. Hopefully that scan will show that there's nothing left or very little. But I'm feeling pretty good. I really am. You know, it was tough at first. I'd say the first 6 weeks, the treatment and the disease were kicking my butt pretty hard, and I was tired a lot. But I'm slowly getting back to normal, so praise God for that.
Well, it's good news, Bob. Good to hear it. I'm glad that you're feeling better, and we wish you a speedy and full recovery to you, and also, of course, your wife, who has had some of her own health issues. So we're thinking about you.
Yeah, she's up and down too. So keep her in thoughts and prayers. And you know, I want to say to everybody out there, I'm getting all kinds of emails and even voicemails from people with words of encouragement, and they're very, very much appreciated. Every one of them means a lot to me. And you know, keep them coming, because sometimes I have a bad day, and to get those voicemails or emails, it means a lot.
That's awesome. If you want to support both of our shows, you can go to the Shooters Club by going to roadgunner.net, click on the Handgun World Podcast logo. That will take you to a link, and you can join up there.
Yeah, by the way, this is going to air on my show, too. And, folks, if you want to sign up for the Shooters Club, go support Chaz at the Road Gunner Podcast. Go over to his website. There's a Do you have our logo up there with a link or something like that?
I've got the Handgun World Podcast logo up at the right-hand side of the page.
And what's your website again? Give out your website.
Roadgunner.net.
Go to roadgunner.net, click on the Handgun World Podcast logo. Chaz is an affiliate of ours. You'll be helping out both shows, and plus you're going to get put into the list for some awesome giveaways June 30th. That's coming quickly.
Oh, man, that's going to be awesome. Personally fired gun by Bob Main.
Yeah, well, personally fired.
I'll have you shoot all my guns and then take a silver paint pen and sign them.
All right, I'll do that.
Thanks, Ken, for coming on the show, Bob. Do appreciate it. Your show is Handgun World Show. What is it? What's the website? I should know. I always just go to the link on mine.
Well, the show is Handgun World Podcast. The website is handgunworld.com. You can listen and download off the website. If you're an iTunes user, you can search Handgun World Podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or pretty much any of the major podcast software delivery mechanisms, whatever you call them. It's on there.
Okay, folks, be there June 7th and 8th. You'll see Ben Branham, Bob Main, John Hathaway, and you'll watch me carry stuff. Centerton, Arkansas.
Thanks.
Bring cigars.
Yeah, I'll be bringing cigars. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Bob. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take care. Many thanks to Chaz for having me on the show. Good stuff. Nice interview. Thank you very much. If you want to listen to his show, like I said, just search for the Road Gunner Podcast on any of the software programs that you use to listen to podcasts. I use iTunes, and I listen to a lot of different podcasts. It's real easy to search on there. By the way, if you use iTunes, please go and give me a review on my show on iTunes. Give me an iTunes review. Let me know what you think of the show, of my podcast. And if this podcast helps you in any way, if my efforts every week help you make decisions about guns and training and concealed carry and so forth, you probably noticed that I don't play a bunch of commercials by a bunch of sponsors on this show. I try to keep this commercial free on purpose for you so that you can get a lot of information. So consider supporting my show in another way. If you buy stuff on Amazon, please go to handgunworld.com and click my Amazon store. And if you just click the page that says Amazon store, there's a direct link. And if you buy through my link on my Amazon store, you'll be supporting my show. Amazon will send me a small fee for what you purchase. You don't have to spend any extra money that way. How cool is that? And you can help support my show that way. Many of you have been signing up lately for the Shooters Club. Ben Branham and I put together once a month, we put up a video or two. And we teach different techniques on videotape for those of you who can't make it to our classes. This is the next best thing. You can join for $75 per year or $8 a month. And go over to the Road Gunner Podcast website and sign up through his link so you can also support his show. It's the same price. So check that out, and there'll be a new video coming up pretty soon here. Ben should have it all edited and put together pretty quick, because we just spent about 5 hours at the range a couple weeks ago filming some pretty good stuff. And by the way, the June 30th drawing, all active annual members, if you're an annual member of the Shooters Club, you're going to be entered into a drawing. We're giving away a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, my personal M&P Shield. We're giving away 250 rounds of 9mm FMJ ammo. We're giving away a really cool range bag, a bunch of holsters, and things like that. So, you know, you can check that out. Go to the Shooters Club link, or go to the Handgun World Podcast link over at the Road Gunner Podcast site and get signed up for that. And as we mentioned in the interview, there's still room left for the June 7th and 8th class in Arkansas that Ben and myself and John Hadaway will be teaching. Well, with all that said, hopefully you enjoyed this week's show. And I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. This music, by the way, that I'm playing is by Ozark Revival. Go to OzarkRevival.com. That's OzarkRevival.com. Sign up for their mailing list and you'll get some free music. OzarkRevival.com. Sign up for their mailing list and you're going to get some free music. Thanks again for listening. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye. You can take that.